Blog Talk Radio.
Life seems to crush your dreams, so find your balance for all your needs. A little work, some family fun. Find your love, keep your life on the run. Told you how the story goes, so write your own script before you grow old. Live your life, laugh out loud. Own who you are, stand up proud. You got.
Hello, and welcome to the Star Chamber Show live podcast. It is a great Wednesday evening here in Central Kentucky, where I am hopefully broadcasting to you live. Sorry for the brief pause, evidently something is amiss with my microphone. So anyway, this is Steve Zimmer broadcasting to you live, and hopefully we've got Holly Phillippe on the phone.
Yes, you got me. I can hear you now.
Hello?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah. You were talking to the ether.
Oh, boy. Well, I don't know why, because I'm using the same mic I have always used, and I don't know why I did that.
Who knows?
We'll do our best.
Well, we can hear you now.
Okay. That's good. It's getting resettled here, because I don't know why this is deciding not to work suddenly tonight, but it is
what
it is. Well,
that's why we have the, the fun of live broadcast. It's extra entertainment for everyone out there because you just never know what's going to happen.
That's right. Always be surprised. So, first of all, though, of course, we're affiliated with Imaginarium Convention, so we do have some news and updates for you on a number of things. And so I want to bring you up to date on everything that's happened since last week. Holly will probably want to comment on a few of these. But we've had everything from single-day event tickets went on sale, in addition to the full weekend event tickets, which, of course, have been on sale already for a few months. And then also we've got new panelists, spotlighted guests, and today we added 6 new panels, 3 workshops, and 3 networking events that were added. So it is a pretty wild time, even in the holiday week. Yeah, we had a lot of new things added. So again, we added the single-day event tickets are now available online. You can get those for Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. And so go check those out on the site if you're looking, you're only able to come for one day of the event, or send a friend or a family member for a single day or a full weekend. I think they make great gifts for the creatives in your life. So think of that when it gets to Small Business Saturday and Black Friday and Cyber Monday and all those great days. Think about giving somebody a event ticket to Imaginarium. And then we've got, of course, 4 panelists that we announced, and some of them you'll recognize well. Actually, all of them you will. Aaron Christopher Drown, great cover designer, cover artist, and author. Then also, of course, our very own Molly Daniels, who's definitely a wonderful listener and supporter of the show here, who also writes under the pen name Kenzie Michaels. She was also announced. Anton Cantry was announced as well. Definitely one that we know and love. And then also Dave Mattingly. Dave is just a genius. The guy knows a lot about a lot of things and has an extensive background in everything from science to publishing to about everything in between, and even hosts the non-denominational church service at Imaginarium every year. And he will be back to do that again this next summer on the Sunday. So yes, definitely great to have Aaron and Molly and Anton and Dave back as panelists. And then we also welcome a new spotlighted guest, and that is Greg Bridgman. And he is an editor and publisher. He is the editor-in-chief at Olivia Kimbrell Press, and he's edited more than 100 faith-based novels. And also, he's got an amazing military career as a decorated combat veteran, currently serves in the National Guard, and he's got a lot of technical savvy. Last year, gave a great workshop on ebook metadata. He's got a lot of technical expertise, very detail-oriented person, fabulous guest, and definitely excited to have Greg joining us next summer. And so now it brings me last but not least, we've got new panels, new workshops, and new networking events. Some of these we'll be talking about a little bit later tonight, just give you a little teaser with our guest of tonight. But the panels, so I'll give you a quick rundown of what they are, and if they have a declared moderator or presenter, I will also add that. We have new panels. We had Creating an Antihero. We have Dr. Moreau's Laboratory, and that's actually going to be great. It's going to use an animal mashups card deck, and that's being hosted by Barbara V. Evers, and panelists are going to be presented with two or three or four animals to mash up, and they're given a few minutes to create a name for an animal and determine its characteristics. And then it's a really cool audience participation type panel that ties in with character development and character creation, but with a focus on animals. Really, really cool panel. Then the Return of Horrors Against Humanity. We've talked about that on the show before with moderator James Sabata. And that, of course, is like sort of like Cards Against Humanity, but with a horror theme. And if anyone remember attended last year, they can definitely tell you that it was a smash success. It was definitely a blast. The audience had an absolute blast watching it. And yes, that is returning for the second edition next summer. Then we also have Terrible Things I Wrote When I Was Young, moderator James Sabata. And yes, it's about all writers writing some pretty bad things when they're starting out. And so, yeah, it's talking about the panelists will be talking about sifting through their slush piles of bad memories and sharing with you some of their most inappropriate ones and hilarious things from along the way of when they were getting started and the early trials and travails of their writing road. And then we also have Win, Lose, or Get Drawn into the Abyss with moderator James Sabata. And that's an audience participation panel based on the classic game show. But yes, this one will also take a game show kind of route. And yes, it's yes, Win, Lose, or Get Drawn into the Abyss. And then we have Writing Prompts and Inspiration, discussion, of course, on getting your writing motor kickstarted through writing prompts and the sources of inspiration just to help you when you're, you know, feeling a little flat, the fizz has gone out of the Coke, so to speak, and how to get that writing creative side of you chugging again. So, and then we also have three workshops that we added. DIY Book Promo, get your book into readers' hands without spending money. And that is from presenter Dan Klefstad, who we recently had on the show. Definitely has been making a lot of bookstore appearances around here, just doing a fabulous job out there with his vampire novel. And he had a great, great guest on the show. Catch that episode in our archive if you happen to miss it. But, yeah, Dan will be there next summer with this workshop. Then we have two from John Bukowski. One is Effective Research in Fiction, and just like the title says, six tips for effectively researching your novel. And then we also have Firearms Primer for Fiction Writers, also by John. And this will teach you the basics for the firearms novice that you include in your writing about long guns versus handguns, revolvers versus semi-automatic, all types of repeating firearms, parts of the guns, shotgun sizes, all kinds of fun details to help you when you're writing a novel that involves firearms. So there you go. That's six new panels, three new workshops, and then we have three networking events. Hillbilly Court BarCon is back, hosted by Three Ravens Publishing, and that is held on Saturday evening of the Imaginarium weekend. A great time to meet other attendees and get some drinks and hang out, because it's held in the bar area in the center of the hotel. And then we also have the two coffee clatches are back. Those were very successful. People just love them, and yes, they are back. So both Saturday morning early at 8 a.m. and Sunday at 8 a.m., we will have Coffee Clatch 1 and Coffee Clatch 2, also hosted by Three Ravens Publishing. So great time to, you know, get warmed up for the days on Saturday and Sunday and hang out and network. So there you go, Holly. You got some comments on the program in there?
Well, I think he went down the list and repeated some, but yeah, that's okay. I did keep the old goodie that we always want, the Marvel versus DC. That'll be back. I also added one while I was sitting here that I spoke with our guest tonight. I'm not going to say the guest yet. We will have an introduction for him, a grand introduction, but Kickstarting 101, learn the do's and don'ts to starting your own crowdfunding. People, you know, approach it from all different avenues and media, and I think it'd be great to add that to our list of panels and hear, you know, several different creatives, you know, tell about their successes and their failures and why both, you know, either succeeded or failed. Because a lot of people ask about crowdfunding.
Well, there you got a scoop then. We got a scoop. We got something that's not even on the website yet. So there you go, folks. A little bit of advanced news, and I'm sure we'll get that posted up and the next few days, because we have a couple more panels that I do need to get added to the site. So, but yeah, quite a lot. And yes, before we get too much farther along, I do want to recognize and spotlight the folks that brought you tonight's show. Sandy Linder, the genre blender, who are very, very grateful for. She's had a very busy November doing everything for NaNoWriMo, and she's got like almost daily YouTube videos. She has been so busy. This November, I have seen. So, yeah, I definitely hope she drops in tonight on the Thanksgiving Eve show. But we've got Sandy, and then we also have that fine fellow, Ren Garcia. That's a famous question. But first, a spot from Sandy. And here we go.
Give someone you love the gift of adventure for Christmas. Help them escape reality with an epic fantasy dragon girl power sword and sorcery saga that thrills and entertains. Send your loved ones to Unveiled for the holidays with a novel from author Sandy Linder. Visit Sandy's author page on Amazon or her website at authorsandylinder.com and make it a fantastic Christmas.
Thank you, Sandy Linder, and make good choices, folks. Definitely, Sandy's writing is of the highest quality, great storyteller, and Sandy's books also make great Christmas gifts. And now we'll go over to the fine fellow, Ren Garcia, and answer his immortal question. Here we go.
The League of Elder dares to be unusual. It's easy to be swept away in this bold and uninhibited landscape where fantastic heroes become old friends and sinister villains inhabit every dark corner. Dare to explore things best left alone. Each book is your lantern, lighting the path to a world never before seen. So what do you say? Are you weird enough for us?
Yes, Ren. We are weird enough for you, my friend. And very thankful for you as well. Thank you very much, Ren Garcia of the League of Elders series. So, yeah, we're going to roll right into the introduction, Holly, because our guest is on deck, as I see in the on the board here. So, yes, tonight's guest is, of course, an Imaginarium favorite, a Star Chamber show favorite, and a Holly and Steven favorite. So, trifecta there.
Yeah.
And he is an amazing, amazingly talented author. And he writes in multiple genres, including science fiction and fantasy and post-apocalyptic fiction and others. He is also the founder and the lead publisher of the award-winning Three Ravens Publishing. And so now, yes, without further ado, you know who we're talking about. The one, the only, Hillbilly William Joseph Roberts. Welcome to the show. Mike.
Now I'm suspicious. You want something. You're being awful nice to me tonight.
Thanksgiving Eve. So, yeah, we're in the holiday mood here a little bit.
How you guys doing tonight?
Oh, I've been cooking.
It's been a busy day. It's been a busy day.
Oh,
yeah.
Lord.
I can agree with that because my holiday weekend is already looking like it's going to be busy as all get out. I mean, the kids have demanded that we're going to sit down. We're doing some gaming because it's been a little while since we
Oh, yeah, we're doing that tomorrow.
But other than that, you know, I'm still playing some catch-up on our publishing queue. So, like, I'm in the process of publishing one right now as we're talking. And
nice.
I got two Robert Silverbergs that I got to publish this weekend and get those turned around and out. So it's like, okay, I know what I'm doing all weekend long.
Oh, I believe me, I can relate. Yeah, because I'll probably be getting into some editing tomorrow
myself.
Never
ends.
Oh, it's constant. I mean, if I can slip in some writing time, it's golden, you know?
Right.
I know.
That's why Stephen does that first thing. Yeah. He does that every morning. He gets up and hits the writing room.
Yep.
Yeah, my normal schedule is I'm up at 0400 so that I can get my writing in between 04 and 06.
Oof.
Yep. Yeah, you do it a little earlier than I do, but yeah, the same theory applies. We have clear minds. Uncluttered by business concerns, it's a good time to be creative.
well that fresh. And the world is asleep.
Yes, that too.
I got no other distractions except for cats sometimes, you know.
Cats.
Well, yeah. That's the office assistant.
And I saw your Instagram post today, and I'm definitely relieved to hear that your kitty survived being run over without injury.
Oh, yeah. Sherbert, the editor kitty, okay, so... He was a find by the neighbors over here. They found him down here in Rock Spring at one of the little restaurants, and something had attacked him, and he was tiny at that point, and something took a bite out of the side of his neck. And they had started nursing him back to health and everything. Well, one morning he just came in for breakfast with the other barn kitties, and it's like, okay, and I asked him about him because I'd seen him flopping around over at the neighbor's place. I'm like, yeah, we're just trying to nurse him back to health. We're just going to find him take him to the pound or something, or find him a place to live. Like, well, okay, well, he came in for breakfast this morning, so we'll go ahead and take him because the kids have already claimed him. And they already named him Sherbert. So he is Sherbert the editor kitty.
No.
Well, the not-too-bright editor kitty decided to dash across the road and got hit by a car.
Oh.
And we didn't know where he went. I mean, for an entire day, literally. We didn't know if he got dragged off with the car, if he went back over to the neighbors and hid it back under the porch over there or what. And then yesterday evening, they showed up. Like, he crawled out from under the house. He's hurt, but he's alive. It's like, okay, cool. And I started checking him out, assessing him. It's like, and it was looking like, you know, there's a good chance his hips was busted up. It looked like his tail was broken the way it was bent and cockeyed and everything. Well, we just gave him a little bit of, I think we gave him some aspirin or ibuprofen, whichever one it is we can give him. Just trying to knock the edge off because he wasn't crying, he wasn't yelling or nothing like that. So we, Meg took him over this morning to the vet, and they x-rayed him, and nothing wrong with him. Everything's fine. Nothing's broken. Nothing's crushed. No internal bleeding. He's just sore. So he's on life number 7 at this point.
Gee.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, okay, he's just sore, and well, he's drug kitty right now because of the painkillers they gave him. I mean, his eyes, those he's dilated, and they're like big, giant saucers, man. But he sat in the kitchen, like, most of the afternoon just staring at Meg, like, hi.
Like I told Holly, cats have superpowers, I swear.
Yes.
It's unreal. They're aliens. You give him opposable thumbs.
He got out of it. He got out of it nearly unscathed. He just beat up a little bit.
Well, I'm glad for that. That's amazing. I tell you, that is unreal. Yeah, if that had been a human, yeah, that probably killed him. But, not the kitty.
Without a doubt.
You know? Yeah, that's crazy. They could jump off a building. They could do all kinds of things. And, they just go on.
Yep.
Off.
And, we wanted the cats for a long time, and because of the brother-in-law who used to live downstairs, he had bad allergies, so we couldn't get them. And, we've got a garden spot out back, and we do an open compost and all that. So there's mice. There's sometimes rats comes around. And so we decided, okay, well, it's just time to go ahead and get some barn kitties. That way they can take care of that. And, man, I tell you what, the number of mice and moles that they've catched, and we've had a few rats they've caught, too. Like, okay, cool.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's dead. Toss it out to the chickens. That's free protein. The chickens are happy as all get out.
There you go.
So it's like they're doing their job and feed them, but I don't feed them a whole lot because I want them to go out and hunt,
right.
So
don't steal, yeah.
Chrome.
That's awesome.
But, yeah.
Yeah, they are very handy, I will say. And that's why, they always kept them around. But since medieval times, they started bringing them in the castles because of the rats and mice. And so they was like, oh, well, you know what? Let's bring these little predators in and see what they could do. And then it became, everybody wanted one in their house.
Yeah. But,
yep.
I mean, it makes sense. And it's a mutually beneficial thing.
That's right. Yeah. And they also lower blood pressure in humans. They do the purring just for humans to help us settle and lower that blood pressure. And they say they even add years to your life, heart disease, a whole bunch of other things, because of your stress. They help with stress. They're amazing little creatures. They really are.
They are. Yep. And I believe I've come across some information where they actually took over the task of doing the mousing in the Roman Empire from ferrets or weasels. The Romans were using ferrets and all, and then cats came in and took over as the hunter of choice. So, yeah, they've had quite a
ferret
history.
Ferret smells. They just have an odor.
They've got a musk about them that just it's
yeah
it's equal to almost a muskrat, somewhere around like a beaver or a groundhog musk. And, I had some friends when I was in the military that had two ferrets.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't matter how many times they bathed them. You couldn't get rid of the smell. And it was worse than, having an overflowing litter box.
Oh, yeah. Big time. I know my daughter has some. And she finally put them in the basement because, oh, God, the smell upstairs, But she let them run around and play with them and take them upstairs once in a while. But, the smell, it don't matter what you do. They just have that odor.
Yeah.
Well, if you have two, you got to name them Toto and Poto after the two in the Beastmaster movie.
Right, yeah.
Back in the
God, I ain't seen that in a minute.
A classic, a true classic. So what are you up to right now? We definitely want to get up to speed on you as a writer, and then we definitely want to hear about the Three Ravens. And
oh, dear God.
Well, let's see. Writing-wise, I've been working on, I've got one short story I got to knock out from my Sword and Sorcery anthology that we're doing, Heathens and Heroes. Shrewsbury's actually one of my anchor authors for that one. I've got to holler at Steve Sterling and see if he'll give me an opening essay on that too. So little things like that. It's interesting the response that I get from some of these bigger named authors when all I'm asking them for is words of wisdom for the baby authors that are working in those genres.
Right.
You know, the power of a question is interesting if you sit back and look at it. And if you don't ask the question, you're never going to get an answer. I have gotten so many things done just by like, well, okay, cool. What am I out? I asked the question. Cool. Moving on. And, you know, so many doors open once you get past that give a crap stage where you just go ahead and do whatever it is that you need to do. You know, you're not worried about where they're at in the food chain. You're not putting them up on those pedestals kind of thing. And lots of doors open. You know, that's one of those things that I keep talking about to the baby authors about, you know, networking. You just do it. Don't stutter. Don't worry about it. It don't matter that they've been doing this for 40 years. They started where you started. And, you know, Kevin J. Anderson, Faith Hunter, Jody Nye, you know, they're some of my mentors right now. And in the grand scheme, they replaced the old guard. We're replacing them. We have to train the next generation. So, you know, those that are brave enough to step up, ask the questions, and get that foot in the door, they're the ones that's going to do the replacing.
Right.
But,
right.
Okay, well, side tangent, but so I got that short story to do on the I'm about halfway done with it, and I will say that following Martin Shoemaker or Kevin J. Anderson's methods on dictation is a very good thing if you want to look into getting productivity done a lot better. Fat Boy needs to go walking more, so I have been. And on a walk, I can dictate about up to 5,000 words that are fairly clean in an hour to an hour and a half. It depends on how the flow of the story is going. I use a basic voice recorder, okay? Everybody talks about Dragon and all these other things and these fancy recorders and fancy headsets. You don't have to have them. If that's your bag, go with it. I'm a cheapskate.
Right.
That's why I won't – well, that's one of the reasons I won't touch Scrivener or any of the others, because I've got Google Docs that I can access from pretty much anywhere. But that's
same.
Also Scrivener's got so many extra bells and whistles and buttons that my squirrel brain is busy doing all this other crap instead of writing.
Right.
So I like it's just a basic spreadsheet and a Word document. I'm good to go. So on the dictation – it's just a basic voice recorder. That's all I use. It's just on my phone. I record the audio. And then if you have a Microsoft Office 365 subscription, then you can log on online and then go into Word Online. The Word Online version has a transcription tool that you upload the audio. It will puke out your text. You go copy, paste, go start your edit run.
What?
And the cleaner the copy as you're dictating it, the better it's going to be. Now, you're going to have to put in punctuation and all that. And there's, you know, if the wind's blowing or something, it's going to be an off word. I suggest grabbing the whole thing with the timestamps so that as you're cleaning it up, if you don't understand what that tried to translate, you can go back and listen to it and say, okay, this is what I said. And it's got the timestamp there so you can just listen to the audio at that point. But literally, roughly about 5,000 words, an hour to hour and a half. And after I got done with the cleanup run, I was setting about 100, I'm sorry. Because, you know, when you're on that edit run, you're cleaning up, you're rearranging because you've already brain puked it. Now you're getting the clean copy and you're doing your main edit run. So productivity-wise... Yeah, and I think the cleanup took me about 2 hours, all said and done, going through that 5,000 words on a good edit cleanup. But still, I had about 3 hours in to 6,500 words. You can't shoot a stick at that. So it takes practice. So if it don't work the first time, keep trying. And, you know,
and it also helps. It helps those of us that do have squirrel brain, you know, ADD, as I do.
Mm-hmm.
So my brain, you know, I have 30 tabs open, and I got this and this and this and this. And this. So, if I can walk and dictate, like I'm doing several things at once, that's when I'm the most productive.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can double dip it there.
That's genius. I didn't even know about that.
There's lots of different things out there about it and how to go about it. Mm-hmm. Was it Michael LaRon? He's another one that does this. He's cranked out a ton of books doing this. I mean, he's dictating while he's sitting there doing the dishes. Every little moment he's got, he's dictating something. And he's at the point where he's gotten a harmonica neck brace, and he's mounted his recorder into it. So he just hits the button, and he goes to doing whatever he's doing while dictating. Now, on the flip side, you know, this is the quality of your electronics. One of the Three Ravens partners, Benjamin Tyler Smith, the rig that he's got this nice recorder, and really it comes down to the headset that he's got with the microphone. It is, mm-hmm. it is sensitive to the point that it will pick up every word he says, clean and copy, but he can ride the riding mower, and it's not picking up any background noise because it picks up what's right at the mic, nothing else.
Wow.
So he's dictating while he's riding the mower. There's options out there, and if anybody's interested in that information, I can get that for you. He swears by it. But again, I'm a cheapskate, and I'll do it my way. And I thought about that rig, and I really thought about it because, like, man, if I could just jump on the motorcycle and go for a cruise while dictating, and then I thought about it, I was like, no, I get off in La La Land, zone out. I don't need to be on a motorcycle doing that.
No,
so bad idea.
No. But a riding lawnmower, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know,
stuff like
and,
that.
And,
I could be cleaning house, doing laundry.
Right, exactly. And, you know, that's one of those where you got to weigh it, because everybody's writer's journey is going to be different, and everybody's capabilities is a little bit different. You know, if you can't afford Microsoft Office 365, okay, cool. Well, you might have a friend that does have it, and if, you know, you're not an asshat, they might go ahead and just take it and translate it for you and send it back to you after you've done your dictation, you know, but that's part of the community. If you got a good writers group or good friends that have access to things like that, you can do what you need to do in Google Docs or whatever you're using, and then, you know, find other ways of doing it.
Right.
Because
that would work great for me, because then I can be multitasking. Because it's the same when I'm editing. And I've talked about this before. You know, Steven has to have, like, complete silence, and everybody works different. Me, I have to have chaos, right? So I have to – my brain's got to be doing something else while I'm editing, so I'm hyper-focused. I can hyper-focus on editing if I put on, like, I don't know, Harry Potter ambiance playlist on YouTube, or, you know, Cozy Witchy Cottage playlist, or, you know, something like that with just some background noise. No – no singing, just background noise, and puts me into that bubble, you know. Plus I've got my hand, you know, one hand to tap it on something or playing with something, and I'm hyper focused. But that's how I have to get there. I can't do that in complete silence because the 30 tabs are going bing 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 bing, and I'm, you know, I can't focus.
Oh yeah, and you know, I'm the same way. I have been able to build Three Ravens where it's at because I can multitask like nobody's business. My average day, there's times when the software that I use for the day job is just sitting there processing. So I'm either punching in words on something that I'm working on, or I'm processing something for publishing, or I'm editing another line. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, on an average, I'll be on a phone call talking to one of my authors while doing the day job, listening through and proofing an audiobook while publishing something else off to the side.
Nice.
And, you know, between all the different I mean, I got my work computer, I got my main laptop, and then I got the old broken laptop that still works, but you can't close the damn thing. And, I mean, I've got dozens of tabs open on everything.
Yep. I know that one.
Yeah. Steve knows how I am with that. You know, it's like I said, Steve focuses on one thing at a time. And then my brain will be sitting there, and I'll be saying, hey, Steve, blah, blah, blah. Hey, Steve, blah, blah. And he'll say, listen, one thing at a time. You know? Because I'm going bing, 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 you know. That's like when it gets closer to Imaginarium, you know, I'll sit there with my laptop and two desktops, and I have all three going, doing different things, but it makes sense to me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm right there with you. Let's see. Yep. Okay, sidetrack squirrel. Besides that short story, I am about 45,000 words into my Bent novel, the Bent universe, biologic enhanced nascent talent. It's basically our superhero universe created by Christopher Woods. I got to wrap that up. Then me and him have been tag teaming back and forth on the next Smuggler's book. Life got in the way on that one. His dad ended up with cancer. And the time that he was finally starting to write again, then we had the cancer and all that hit here in the house.
Right.
You know, past cancer caught up and everything started going to hell in the handbasket. So, you know, it all just went sod, and I've caught up my sections finally and kicked it back to Woods, and I'm waiting on him to send me the next chapter back, because this is one of those we tag team, we go chapter by chapter back and forth. The initial book, Smuggler's Run, we did that thing in like a month. It was so fun. We'd write a chapter, and we'd leave that chapter in alerts to where we were screwing the other guy. And like, all right, get out of that one. So you'd have to come up with an interesting solution to how to get out of that problem and leave the other guy in alerts. And it was just back and forth, back and forth. But it was fun.
Right.
I mean, hell, I cranked out five chapters in one day. We were just back and forth with it. So working on that, and I've been plugging away at my next JTF novel, Blacktooth Grin. That one's been just slow going because I've been doing a lot of other things. Besides that, I'm getting a lot of invites to cons now.
Yeah.
I just did the trip up to Chicago with the Evanston Writers Workshop. That was interesting. That was the first time that I've been, you know, they flew me in, they put me in the hotel, they fed me the weekend, and just got to go up there and relax a little bit and just talk to people. Give them information, you know. I ended up picking up a baby author to mentor. I tossed my hat in the ring for their raffle, and it's like, okay, well, what can we give back to the community here? As far as I know, Debbie's going to be bringing me back in 25 for that one. Invited out to the Pacific Northwest Writers Conference, I think it is. I'd have to look back at my email. In September next year, I'm the Toastmaster for Chattacon coming up in January. I'll be out at Superstars Writing Seminar this year as a speaking guest again. And then I'll be at JordanCon, and then we'll Imaginarium and LibertyCon. So yeah, my con schedule is getting kind of booked up already.
Yeah,
man, oh man.
But now on top of all that, you know, it's the publishing side, and you guys know how the publishing stuff can go. I mean, it just eats time up. And
yeah, it does. When you get behind, it snowballs, and it's rough, and especially when life gets in the way, you know, health,
right,
life.
Snowball started last summer with Pat and the cancer and everything, and it got behind, and then, you know, I ended up landing that IP contract with Steve Jackson Games, and that kind of took the front lead because it had to. You know, that was a big deal. You know, it's a big break.
Mm-hmm.
Those stuff that was in the publishing queue got slid to the back. And, you know, we're trying to catch that up now. And in the meantime of that, I end up landing a couple of repubs for Robert Silverberg, of all people. And I'm still like, what is going on? You know, and then
that's because you're out and about, and you're very vocal and you're very personable. And a lot of these authors, and I know you tell your baby authors, you are your brand. You have to be vocal. You have to rub shoulders with people. You have to introduce yourself. You have to talk to your peers, not just you know, people passing your table. You have to chat with your peers. It
well,
takes a village.
You network. That's how you make things happen.
That's exactly right.
And, you know, you brought up a good thing, you know, interacting with people at tables. And I see so many times people are just sitting at their table. It's a nice, beautiful setup. They spend a lot of time, a lot of money in it, and they might even be decked out in cosplay, but all they're doing is sitting there looking at their phone. Like
playing on their phone.
You got to look up and interact. And that's how you sell books. That's how you start the conversation. I mean, the running ideal is these conferences, if you break even, you're doing great.
Right.
You know, that's just part of the gig. An expo is a whole other thing. I mean, you can make a good bunch of money selling bulk product at an expo, but these writers' conferences, they're generally small.
Right.
And, you know, your main thing there is you're trying to make a contact with either other authors that you can network with and potentially find out other gigs and opportunities, things like that, or you're interacting with potential. That's how you start that dialogue, and if they get to like you, cool. And, you know, I've seen some that they are pure Eeyores, and everything is woe with me. It's like, what are you doing? Yeah. Are you trying to sabotage your career? Because nobody wants to sit there and listen to your pity party.
The morose ones, the morose ones.
We get tickled, we shouldn't, but, you know, you'll be at a book fair or whatever, and we have seen it time and time again, and I know people are cracking on it now, but
early afternoon,
they start packing up their crap, they are sad, and here's me and Steve, joking, laughing, having fun, talking to people, running around, taking turns, you know, greeting people, networking, you know, we're having a blast. And they're staring over at us like, what is wrong with you people? You know, they're morose. And I'm like, learn, you know, you can't just pack up, give up. You got to network. You've got to talk to people.
That goes back to the branding, you know.
Yeah.
You are your brand. And, you know, I never intentioned it when I started doing it, but I am the brand of Three Ravens. And that's the feedback that's coming back to me now that I'm finding out. Like, Three Ravens is a thing, but I am absolutely...
You are the face.
I'm the face man. I'm the one that people see.
Yeah.
So, you know...
Same way with us,
You know, you are your branding. And whatever you bring to the table, 100%. That's what people are going to remember.
Yep. Everything you do, everything you say, you have to watch your P's and Q's. Especially with social media. You know, we've told, I don't know how many people, shut your mouth, watch what you're saying. Don't get into pick your battles. You know the room, read the room. You know, you don't like it, scroll on past it. You know, just don't get, because you are your brand, and you can really star a lot of readers against you, you know, or the council mob, and then, you know, you're done.
Yeah, I absolutely hate social media. I mean, I've got 20-plus different social media pages between my author stuff and Three Ravens. I hate it. It is such a black hole of doom. I've got better things to do than sit and serve. But, unfortunately, it's part of the business. And, you know, the best rule of thumb is if you can stay in that gray area where you're not ostracizing anything, unless that's just part of your brand, I mean, you know, Larry Correa, we know that he is far right wing, and everybody knows that. That's just part of his brand. You know,
that's
where there are others that are far left side, that's part of their brand. And,
and that's their readership, that's their following.
And it is, but that goes back to where do you want to be?
Right.
How do you want to set this up? How do you want to play the game? I mean, mean, you're playing a big game of office politics when you really step back and look at the whole thing. I mean, if you've never read Sun Tzu's The Art of War, it's very worthwhile getting the little pocket copy, just because the principles in there apply to this so well. You step back and you look at the field of battle and you weigh all of what's going on. All right, now what do I want to do with this? And that's one of the biggest things in the hardest thing for somebody to it's one of the hardest things for people to decide on what they're doing with this.
What they want to accomplish, their target audience. Yeah, that's the big ones there. And no, you should write. You know, I don't think you should write methodical just to please your readers. Write what you love. Write from the heart and soul. You know, don't worry so much about that. However, you do not want to do something or say something that's also going to turn all of your loyal readers against you.
Right.
You know, that's what I said. You got to read the room.
Well, I mean, look at J.K. Rowling. You know, I don't even know the full scoop on that. Was it actually something got taken out of context or not? But
she
her fan base just, like, ate her alive.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I lost respect for J.K. I really have. But she really talked out about trans people, and it wasn't like total bashing, but it was enough to where you get where she's coming from. You know how she feels. You know what I'm saying? She said enough to like get rid of a bunch of her readers that really loved her, turned against her.
Yeah, and that's one of those things you get away. But, you know,
that's it. But she
if you're trying
too.
To make a living at
I mean,
it.
She's successful. When you're at that level, that's like Steve says, F you money. You know, when you're at that level, you can get by with more of that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean,
you can
get by with a lot more.
Destroying. Yeah, an indie author that entered that arena would get annihilated. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
You'd be canceled.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to pick your battles, and like
you
said, you got to decide. You got to decide, you know, what you want to accomplish with this. You know who you're targeting as far as readership.
Well,
I mean, you
got to be happy with
say
it too.
If you're left or right or whatever.
Well, and you got to be happy with it. I mean, I see a lot of people, especially this time of year, they are die hard, gung ho for Nano. And I have a big relationship with Nano.
No.
It's a great thing to get people to start working on something.
Agreed.
But you can write all year long. You don't have to just do Nano. I mean, it's almost to a point of being, what is the freaking word?
Crutch?
Yeah, a crutch or...
in a way.
I can't. Words are hard.
Squirrel.
But yeah, people use it as a crutch a lot of times. It's just like you can write all year long. I mean, even if you just write 200-300 words a day, you're still doing something and making forward progress. It's okay.
Trends, Moon's talking in the Swanhern. You know the infamous Moon that we love. He's talking in the chat, and he said maybe, like, you know, it's a trend now. It's a fad, gimmicky, you know, almost to a lot of people because they're just wanting to get on trend.
Yeah, it is.
But some people it works for them. I know several. Karma Haley Shoemaker, which is, one of the Imaginarium family, she loves Nano. She writes all year, but... let me tell you, it's like a religious experience because she loves Nano and she's all gung-ho about it and excited, you know, when it comes to fall, she's like, Nano is coming, you know, and it helps her. I mean, some people have good results from it. Some people, it lights a fire under their ass, you know?
Yeah.
And that's good, but you can't just think, oh, I'm not wrote for 6 months. Oh, November's coming. Oh, I've got now. No, no, you should write a little bit every day. Something. You know? But yeah, if it works, it makes me anxious. Because I'd be worried about, oh, God, I got to get that word count. I got to get that word count. I got to get the word. And it would actually cause me, because I'm OCD too, so it would cause me, I'd be in panic mode. Steven knows. I mean, I would be running around the house and cleaning methodically and wiping walls and everything else, worrying about it. I have to do that with my nervous energy. Yeah, it would actually cause me to go into panic. Too much stress.
I tried it 1 year and just like, okay, cool. I got half my novel knocked out, but it ended up being like 130,000 words too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and how much of that did you have to go back and rework?
Oh, a lot of it, but that was my first novel too.
Mm-hmm.
That thing, I ended up editing it for like 4 runs over 9 months before I finally said, screw it, I'm done, and I published it.
You got to rip the Band-Aid off at some point.
Yeah.
I know that, you know, we're our own worst critics, and that's never going to change. I don't care if you've got 100 books out. You're your own worst critic. All the time, it's never going to be good enough. It's never going to be finished. You could keep working on it for another 10 years, and it's not going to be, you know, perfect for you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and, you know, something else a lot of folks need to look at, too. I mean, and it goes back to, you know, where do you want to be? And I know the dream is to be published by one of the big four, big five, you know. But
not everybody.
The reality of that, it's not going to happen for most of us.
Nope.
Because they are limited. They are limited by the print schedule.
Yeah.
And I know because I've talked to Tony Weisskopf over here from Bain Books, and she just lives about 5 minutes down the road from me. And they're limited by what the printer is letting them have slots for. And that's how they build their schedule for the year. Okay, we need to do this and this and this. We're going to publish this. You know, the more feasible thing is absolutely either going indie and self-pubbing or getting with a small publishing house that has the bandwidth to handle you and others. And, you know, I still can't wrap my mind around why the big guys still do this of buying thousands of copies at a time that they don't know if they're going to sell or not, why they allow them to be destroyed. It's like, I can't
that
wrap my head around
sense.
That. I mean, I set everything on Ingram to... You know, no, I'm not doing returns. You buy it, you got it. And I put it at the lowest percentage discount.
Amen.
And it's like, all right, y'all want it? Cool. And we found, out in the wild, we found Three Ravens books in Barnes & Noble and Books A Million and stuff. So it's like, it happens. And it is happening. But, you know, I don't want inventory. I don't want nothing to do with having a stack of money sitting there that I can't guarantee will go anywhere. Not to mention, if anything happens, okay, we get termites, we get a leak. You know, you just lost all that inventory potentially,
you know? Tornado. I mean, seriously, fire.
POD is such a beautiful thing. Why keep inventory and have money sitting there when you can just do it as you need to?
Right on. Totally agree. Totally agree.
And, you know,
You shouldn't be punished, and I know this goes out to, like, baby indie publishers. We can have a baby. You know, we've never done a baby indie publisher panel. You know, that's a great idea, actually. People that's wanting to get into it, looking at, I'm serious. We've never done
it. Well, yeah.
You know,
you want to do that panel, I'll get up there and tell them, hey, you're getting ready to have a new job.
No. Do not.
Because that's literally what it is. I mean, if you're going to try to write full-time and that's where you want to be, you have to treat it like a job. It's not just a hem-haw and when I feel like it. The same thing with the publishing. If you're going to go that route, Right. I mean, look at Rick Partlow. That man is a machine. He cranks these things out left and right, and he is putting them out there. A bunch of the guys over there working for Atheon, they're doing great, and they just keep cranking it out one title after another.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they found their pacing. They found their thing.
Well, that's it. And they also have
also
more
doing,
help.
Yeah, well, they're also doing Mill Sci-Fi, too, and that,
mm-hmm.
that genre, it just, they devour everything that comes out.
Right. Right.
So the more you can pump out, the better.
That's it. Mm-hmm. That's it. It's like romance readers. They're ferocious.
Yeah, yeah. You get those whale readers that will devour everything.
Yeah. The new authors that are trying to decide between indie and traditional, another thing you got to think about is us indie publishers. We do have life. We do have life that gets in the way. We have things that's going to happen. We do get behind on, you know, certain times. We'll get caught up eventually,
mm-hmm.
but we do get behind. Where traditional, you know, they're going to be more on a schedule because they have a huge staff. Indie, we do not.
Yeah.
However, you get more, shall I say, your rights if you're going to go indie publishing because
yeah.
you're going to get, you know, say in your cover, you're going to get say, you know, with editing, and you're going to get the last word on a lot of things that traditional publishers, they're going to say, we don't care. We're going to go with this title, you know, this cover. We go with this
uh-huh.
cover artist. We go with this one. This is what we're going with, whether it pertains to your book or not. We don't care. It's going to sell. This is what we're going with, and you don't get no say. So, you know,
yeah.
you got to weigh those two.
And you know, going indie, you generally get a better percentage cut, too.
That's true. That's true.
You know, part of the dream for going with the big trad, you know, you get the advance. The advance is for a baby author. I mean, talking with more than a few of these guys, I was talking to Jonathan Mayberry at Dragon Con, and
mm-hmm.
I cannot remember the publishing company he's working with right now, Blackstone.
Mm-hmm.
a baby author, unknown, that has something good that they like, they might get a $10,000 advance. Might. The advances
right.
aren't that big. Now, the downside of those advances that a lot of people don't understand is you have to earn it out. If your title does not earn past that $10,000, you'll never see another penny again from that.
Right on. You don't get royalties.
You know,
you don't get knitting, you know.
Exactly. And those
mm-hmm.
are things you've got to weigh.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you go try to go trad, they're not going to put any advertising money into you unless you are just that new surefire thing that they think is going to sell, like, you know, J.K. Rowling. That was one of those
right.
things that they jumped on and they advertised the crap out of her.
Mm-hmm.
But most
Stephanie
don't
Meyer.
Get anything. You yep. you get up on the shelf and that's it.
Oh, 50 Shades of Grey. They really hoard her out, let's say. But
yeah,
I mean, seriously, you know, she makes
have you read that?
Because no, Stephen said he read like the first four pages and he was done. He said it was so bad. He couldn't get that. He's like, Holly, don't even waste your time. I'm like, okay.
Well, okay. My mother-in-law's little apartment complex, you know, it's a retiree
mm-hmm.
community. And downstairs, it's like you got the little central stairwell goes up to the upper level and all that. And down there in that little vestibule, you got a little seat or a couple of seats. They got a little table down there, and there was a copy. Like, all right, so let's see what all the hubbub's about. I made it about a page or two in. It's like, who the hell edited this thing? It's crap, you know?
Right. That's
yep.
true.
That's true.
Yep. And, but they
so,
they
know,
advertised. You
and,
know, they had
made
the money
it trendy.
To do it. Yep. Yep. That's right. And the soccer movement ate it up.
That's, you know, I follow a little bit of a, I guess it's a philosophy. I don't know. When I first got started, Terry Maggart, I don't know if you know the name or not.
Yep.
Oh, we know Tim very well.
I was talking to him at LibertyCon one year, and one of the things that he said early on, and this was probably like in 2018, he said one of the keys of where he's been at and where he's going has been fake it till you make it. And it's no different than if you got that clipboard and you look like you're important enough and you're going someplace, people will leave you alone. People will notice you. You know, that sort of thing.
Yep.
That same kind of concept. And that's what falls along with this whole thing with, like, 50 Shades of Grey. They made it look like something when it was really nothing at all. It was trash. But they made it into some big do, and now everybody's, I mean, I've got my theory on wine. Okay? I personally can't stand most wines because it's dry, it's bitter. It's like, who the hell is why? I like my sweet wines, but I make a mean honey mead.
Yeah, you
and
do.
And I have that theory that somebody somewhere way back in the past, they had screwed up a batch, and that's where it come up to being what it is. But they sold it as something. It's the presentation of, it's the experience of, not the product itself. They sold it that way. They made the people think that, hey, this is something big. The big to-dos are enjoying it, so we must have to enjoy it too. And there you go. It just perpetuates the myth, and now it becomes something. James Artemus Owen, he talks about this same kind of principle in his Eggs Benedict speech that he does at Superstars. I finally get to attend this one. He actually gave me the speech at the bar my first year there. we sat and talked for 4 or 5 hours. We closed the bar down.
Tell you.
Great guy. But, you know, it's the same kind of thing. It's all on that presentation. And that's
right
really
on.
Part of your branding too.
Not with anything.
You know, you're bringing an experience. You're not just trying to sell a product. The product is not the thing that you're selling. It never is. It's the experience of the read, the experience of the interaction, the potential connection with the author, reader, you know, that's what you're selling. Because that's really what people are looking for. I mean, you look out there, a lot of people really want to know about these authors and their daily lives and this and that. That's one reason why you'll see random crap up on my things. I mean, I've got the cats. I've got something with the chickens. We're in the garden today, working on the motorcycle, whatever little projects are going on here. I'm cooking this. Because it's those little life things that might catch somebody's eye and might connect somebody on some level. You know, I'm a firm believer in doing that kind of stuff. Because you can't just be pumping your books out because then you become a spam machine and nobody wants to listen to you.
That's it. People get tired of it. And then they just turn an eye to it or scroll past because they're like, oh, another ad.
Yep,
you know,
exactly.
Especially on social media, another ad, they want to know what's going on, you know, behind the scenes things or, you know, each day I try to, my wall's hilarious because it's chaotic, but I try to put at least something positive because Steve can vouch for me. If I do not put a positive post out once a day, I get freaking messenger blowing up. Bing, 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 bing. People are like, are you sick? Are you having a fibro flare? No, I'll pray for you. You know, blah, blah, blah. They think, you know, I'm dying if I do not get my daily, you know, serotonin dose out for everybody. So I try to put something funny out or, you know, encouraging because there is so much just crap and just, you know, discouraging things on social media. So. Yeah, that's right. And that's why I like seeing your stuff, too. You know, what you're cooking, what you're grilling, what you're, you know, doing mead-wise. You know, people love that, too. Your readers love that. They love to see what you're doing.
William's posts make me feel like home because there's like L8 bottles in every fourth or fifth post. I love it.
Yeah, L8 rules. Hello.
Oh, well, now that's become my little thing because, you know, I'm hosting a music show over on Sci-Fi Radio now. And that's my little treat to myself because, you know, we've got a Kroger down there in Dalton. That's about an hour away. that they carry LA. So I doubt it. I try to ration it. I've got some stashed downstairs and hidden. I put one in the fridge. That way, come Wednesday, I'll crack my bottle open. Kids keep finding it, so I'm out now, and I got to go back to Dalton. But,
that's funny. I hide it from the grandkids because the oldest grandkids, you know, I hide it. Because I'm like, no, I want my one a day. I have to have my go-go juice, one a day, you know.
Yep.
I don't know why.
At some point, the boys over at L.A. is going to get tired of me tagging them on that thing every time I put it up there. But it's like, man, why not? What are they going to do, tell me to stop? Okay.
No, it's free advertising for them.
Oh, they love it. They love it. Yeah.
It's free advertising. Heck, yeah. We need to write an L.A. book one day.
Yes. L.A. mythology, themed anthology. Yep.
That's needs to happen. Needs to happen.
And, you know, doing those random posts, too, you know, I'll do those little videos and stuff, and I will shove it the gambit. I mean, I've got, there's five different social media platforms like TikTok that I'm on. It's like, it's Likey, Thriller, Clapper, TikTok, and then, well, YouTube, and there was another one, Rumble, I think it was. And you'd be surprised at the random things that get hits and get views. I mean, most of my posts about the books and this and that, they don't really get much of anything. What was it? I was talking about the spicy apples out here at the apple tree because my pepper patch, you know, my hot peppers, I put them there instead of out with the garden, so they didn't cross-pollinate because I'm the only fire eater in the house. And we ended up with spicy apples because the capsaicin leached into the ground and the apple tree picked it up. I got 20,000 views on that thing.
Did you make some apple butter out of that?
No, we ended up eating them all. And I made
that would have been
cobbler.
Fantastic. I canned some of your jalapenos. I pickled them suckers, and I canned them. And we're eating them, and they're damn good.
Oh, I've got probably 6 gallons worth of dried habaneros, jalapenos, and cayennes that I got to grind up and turn into my pepper spice mix. Random stuff like that. And then I was cooking ribs a couple weeks back. And I've got a process that I go through. And I pre-cook in the oven part of it because of the way I steam it with the different flavors and the mixture that I put into it. And then I take it out to the grill and I do the final bit out there. You know, I grill it and I get that little bit of char to it with the smoke. And people are like, oh, my God, something's wrong with those ribs. Those are rotten. It's like, no, they're not rotten. This is part of my process. But that thing got me about 12,000 views, too.
Right.
So you never know what's going to catch somebody's attention, and then they start following.
No, and then they're going to look at your other stuff.
Yeah,
bingo,
exactly.
There you go. You've picked up a reader.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And readers too, they love that. Fans, you know, the ones that become your fan, they love seeing, they want to learn more about you, your personal life. You know, get into your head, because then they enjoy the stories more. You know, they feel like they know you and they love it. You know, that's the same way with like Anne Rice. I'm a People of the Page member. I have been for decades, you know. I miss her so terribly posting. But, yeah, I mean, it felt like, you know, I knew Anne. I know what she likes and dislikes, and I knew so much about her. So when I'm reading, you know, I would see these times where she had a religious experience or, you know, she was changing, and you could see all this in her writing. And it just makes it that much more exciting.
I had something pop in my head. Now the squirrel just went.
Ribs writing. I did see the post about your ribs. I liked it. I did see that. But, yeah, that is you know, and I don't put all your eggs in one basket. I want to touch on that just a little bit. Don't think, oh, I'm going to become an author and I'm going to sell these books and I'm going to become rich. don't put all your eggs in one basket. Branch out like you do with your mead or, you know, spice blends or, like, is it somebody that comes up with the hot sauce?
Yeah, my sister, she tries to burn me, and she ain't managed to do it yet. She's been doing pepper jellies, things like that at the little local craft fairs, and she's working on getting her hot sauce certified so she can actually sell those. But she makes some good stuff.
Right.
There it is. I lost what I was working on there.
You got it. Is it back?
Yeah, it's back. Yeah, multitasking.
Yes, squirrels.
Well, I also got up at 3 o'clock this morning too, so the tires are starting to kick in.
I go to bed.
And you know, all the eggs in one basket. That's something else for the author to look at. You know, if you're going to go it alone, or if you're going to go with a small publishing house. You know, really look into what they're going to do for you. Where are they going to put your stuff? Are they just going to put it on Amazon, or are they going to try to go wide? How are they doing your audio? Are they doing audio? You know, those are important questions you really need to look at. You need to read that contract over the bottom, left to right, all the way through, over and over and over, until you absolutely understand what every line means in there. Think
and
about
please,
it like a demon
read
contract.
The movie rights. It is, and read the movie rights.
One thing that I learned after the fact that I wish I'd learned earlier, if they're just using that free ISBN that Amazon gives you, you've just lost your media rights. Amazon owns it because it's that they publish through that. So, you know, if your thing shows up on Netflix or Amazon or something like that, it's like, oh, well, there's why. You know, but look at those fine details. And same thing, if you're going to be doing this on your own, look into the fine details of it. Do you just want the convenience of going to Amazon? Do you want to go put your things wide, draft to digital, which is honestly stupid easy? My format right now that we've been shifting to is we go to Kindle Unlimited to start with. I put print through Ingram and through Amazon. And once the Kindle Unlimited money really kind of dries up, okay, cool. We take it down from Kindle Unlimited. We go wide with it. That way we can get into the library systems across the world. You know, that's school libraries. That's public libraries. That's prison libraries.
Right.
You have a potential base there that you haven't tapped yet because Amazon's just stupid. So, you know, you got to look at those kind of things and balance that out. You know, if you go through ACX.
Well, Amazon baby, traditional.
Yeah. You know, if you go through ACX, okay, cool. You can get a narrator. You can do it for royalty share only, so there's no cash out of pocket. And I've done a lot of our titles like that, but it got it out in audio. And that's a good chunk of our income is audio. It's ebook and audio.
Uh-huh.
One thing that we're moving to is I'm making contracts with narrators directly and doing a royalty share with them. But, you know, we've got a good working relationship. That way I can go to Findaway Voices and I just take our stuff direct. Now I can actually, you know, going through Findaway Voices, that puts
that audio on.
Well, it's on 44 different platforms through Findaway now instead of one.
Right.
But on top of that, you can sell direct if you want to sell direct on your store. And if you're using a Square at a convention to sell your books and, you know, swipe a card, you can set up an online Square store that you can link back to your website. So you can actually do online sales or direct sales if you want for, you know, ebooks, audiobooks. I know more than a few people that do direct sales with print and, you know, they get an order and they go over to Ingram and they place the order and have it shipped and good to go.
You don't actually have to get the book, go to the post office, go do all that, right?
Right. And, you know, there's a lot of different methods. So But that's where do you want to be? And that's the part that blows people's minds.
Right.
They just can't comprehend half the time. Where do you want to be? What do you want to do? How much effort do you want to put into this? Because at the end of the day, you've got an extra job.
Well, that's it. What's your purpose? Are you wanting to do it as a hobby? Are you wanting just to put it in your friends and family and, you know, whoever's hands? Or, you know, are you wanting to do it as a second income? Or are you wanting to quit your job and actually rely on it as an income? You know, that's questions you better know the answers to right out of the gate.
And that one, okay, most authors that are full-time writers, A, have a working spouse that takes care of the main bills and covers the insurance. That's the prime model for that. Now, there are hundreds of thousands of authors out there making a good living wage, making, you know, that $60,000 to $120,000 a year on their writing alone, and you've never heard of them.
Correct.
Because they've got their little fan base, you know? So it's possible. You can do it.
Right.
But the majority of working authors, they have a side hustle of some kind. I mean, Kevin J. Anderson, he teaches at the college. That's his side hustle for getting insurance. You know, Jody Lynn Nye and Bill Fawcett, they've got side hustles besides just doing their own writings and all. You know, Jody is the managing editor for Writers of the Future. And then, you know, Bill Fawcett, he does these speaking engagements.
Right.
You know, everybody's got some kind of side hustle that they do to take care of the bills and bring in the cash.
You have to.
And what was it? Catherine Rush and Dean Wesley Smith, they are prime examples of that side hustle because, you know, they've had bookstores, they've had this, they've had that, and they've always done something when they had to. Otherwise, they were just writing. I don't remember. I've got two or three of their audiobooks on, you know, the craft and the business and all that. They're well worth going through, but they talk about, you know, you better be ready for a hard, rough run if you're going to try to do this full time. And, you know, I'm not trying to knock anybody out of the dream because I know where I want to be. I'm trying to get there, too. I still got a day job. And until I make something happen, I'm stuck in that day job.
Well, you got a family. You have to support them.
Exactly.
You know, you have to be responsible. So, yeah, you have to have a side hustle. Unless you've got a sugar mama or a sugar daddy, you know, you're going to have to side hustle. And even so, it's still never good to put all your eggs in one basket. You need to say, even actors, I mean, we can even – actors do the same thing. They invest. They do other things on the side because, you know, you can't rely on being a creative, and it sucks, but that's the reality. You know, you need a side hustle, something to fall back on just in case, you know, especially if you have a family. It's okay if you're single and, you know, nobody depends on you, but if you got people depending on you, you better have a backup plan A, B, C, and D, you know.
Well, what was it? Brandon Sanderson, you know, he worked third shift at a hotel for years, and that's how he was able to crank out his first couple of books. You know, he put himself into a position that he could be productive in multiple ways.
Right.
What was it? Jim Butcher had something like that, too. I forgot what it was he was doing just before the pandemic hit. I was actually looking at, Meg was working at a car lot doing the books for them, and she had the insurance. Everything was good, and the plan was we were going to do the flip-flop. I was going to make up the difference of what we needed. It's some side hustle, part-time job, whatever, and then she would take care of the main part. I was seriously looking at Gold's Gym, third shift. I would just have to go and clean equipment and hand out towels and wash the dirty stuff for the night and fold it up.
And run.
Yeah, and write.
Yeah.
And, like, I could do that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's one of those, I would be dictating the entire time probably. But, you know, I was already looking at that possibility of how can I bring money in and how can I still be productive.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. When it's the same way, even those of us that are on disability, because, you know, I have the silent disabilities.
Yeah.
We still be productive members of society. Yeah, I can't be a nurse no more. You know, I was a nurse for over 2 decades. However, I can lend my brain and help. You know, yeah, there's times where, you know, I don't even feel like getting on my computer. But people understand that, and our authors understand that, and they know, you know. But, yeah, I mean, I can lend my hand. I can put my hat in a ring. I can still be a productive member of society, and I can still do things. So, you know, never count yourself out, even if you have a disability, whether it's mental, physical, it doesn't matter. Don't count yourself out. You know,
yeah,
you can still do something.
Don't compare yourself either, because everybody
Mm-mm.
has their
Mm-mm.
own way of doing. Everybody's got their own pace.
Yep.
That's it.
I mean, as long mm-hmm. as you're making forward progress, and you're doing it in the way that you want to do it, you're living your best life, that's what matters right there.
Mm-hmm.
Be happy
right.
with what you're doing.
Right. And you're getting to create what you want to create. That's
right.
the main thing.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Rick Partlow, he's getting anywhere between 3,000 and 5,000 words a day. The man's a
mm-hmm.
machine, if not more.
And not
you
everybody's going to be able to sustain him.
Right. And, you know, what is it, John Ringo, he'll sit and, he used to sit and mull over something, and then he'd go down to the basement, lock himself in, and like 3 or 4 days later, he'd come out with a new novel. He'd go into that manic, boom, here it is.
Right.
Robert Silverberg, he would go into the office up there at one of the editor's offices. They'd give him an assignment. Hey, we need a science fiction novel by Friday. Okay, cool. He went home and he punched it out on a typewriter, and he had it done by Friday.
See,
but
most
those
of
the exceptions
can't do that. We're not machines.
Yeah.
You know, if you're getting a few hundred words a day, great. That's something. You're getting somewhere. You know, but you
right.
got to find that happy spot. You got to be happy with what you're doing. If you're miserable, you need to reevaluate where you're at.
That's it.
Because something's wrong. Something's not right. I mean, I'm miserable right now, but it's my own doing and, well, just life, because I'm playing catch-up.
Yep.
I'm not writing as much as I want to, but I know I got, you know, light at the end of the tunnel. We're getting there.
You're right. I'm in that same boat. Yep. I get you.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know. My illnesses have been, blah, you know, but
yeah,
yeah, it is. You got to look at that light at the end of the tunnel, you know, and we all have our own pace. We all have our own way, but don't ever think you can't do it. You can. You just don't compare yourself to others. Go at your own pace.
Yeah.
Right. Yep.
Mhm. Never compare yourself to others, because that's going to lead to a very rough road. You know.
Yeah.
You're not going to be the next Stephen King tomorrow. You're not going to be the next Anne Rice tomorrow. You know, baby steps, baby steps.
Yep. And those little baby steps add up. I mean, all those little steps that I've been
yeah.
doing over the last 5 years, they're adding up now.
Right. You're seeing the fruit of your labor.
Yeah. And it's just like, holy crap, what's going on? I'm
yep.
waiting for something bad to happen, because I'm just like,
oh, no, knock
this?
On wood. I'm not going to wait for you.
Oh, yeah. But you know what I mean, though. You know, my paranoia kicks up like, wait, what's this?
I know. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, mm-hmm. the big boys, they've got that little voice. That little demon is in the back of their head still, too.
Uh-huh.
They question
oh, yeah.
why anybody wants their stuff.
Stephen King is even going to still question, how is people buying this? Why are they reading
right.
all this? You know, why am I so popular? I mean, it's still in the back of his head. He's still amazed, you know? But, you know, he's got the FU money, and he can just write what he loves and don't have to worry about it. He knows it's going to be a bestseller, and, you know, I'm going to rake in some money. And but he's still, you know, crazy enough to sit there and think, oh, but I got this idea in my head, and I'm going to type this up, blah, 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 you know, and just keep going because he is a machine, and that's the way it is. But you got to love what you do. If you love what you do, you never work a day in your life.
Exactly.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. And if you want to get to that point, it is indeed baby steps. Don't assume you're going to be the next big thing. Don't ever assume that. Go in with realistic expectations. You've got to look at it from a maybe even a a different view. You can't go into it thinking, oh, it's all rainbows and sunshine. You know, and that's the way it's going to be for me. You have to look at it as, oh, there's going to be bumps in the road or I'm going to tank. You know, you've got to be a realist.
Yeah. Well, Holly and William, we are coming up on about 3 minutes before we went over the live show. We're into the after show, as it is.
No, that don't ever happen when I get on here.
Yeah, we're trying to have mercy on you because you get up so early.
We're having fun.
And do it. But before they cut us off here, we got about a couple minutes left. I do want to give you a chance to give all the details on folks finding you and connecting with you and Three Ravens.
Easiest way is to go to threeravenspublishing.com. You'll find everything that we got going on. We've got a lot of titles coming out that I'm trying to get done and caught up with. You know, our Trailer Park series, we had Volume 3 come out this year already. We had the latest Horror Warriors novel, 72 Hours of Graceland, by David Hensley out. Marathon of Madness is next on deck, and that's by Christopher Woods. It was so good and hooked me that I read it in under a day. And I'm dyslexic.
Nice.
I have to reread lines. So it's wow, you know. The next JTF novel we got coming out actually on Black Friday is Wave Song by Michael Gantz. That's a debut novel. Karen Haber, a.k.a. Karen Silverberg, I'm doing a short story collection but for her. It's coming out next Friday. Battlefield, Missouri, debut novel by retired Colonel Arnold Montgomery. This thing, it's like an old school action, like a Mac Bolan almost, with the way the action's set up. Lots of good characters, lots of believable characters. If you've ever been in service, you're going to enjoy this. I burned through this one in no time too. It was like day and a half. I read this one and just loved every bit of it. I actually, while we were on this, I just finished the publishing on, Tales from the Mare Nebrium. It's a repub for Dan Holyfield. I got three Silverberg novels that we're republishing that'll be coming out in the next couple of weeks. The Book of Skulls, Time Hoppers, and To Open the Sky. I'm trying to think of what else. Where's the list? Oh yeah, there it is. I've got Tales of the Apocalypse, Tomorrow's Hope, and Blood, Sweat, and Steel. A couple of anthologies. Post-apocalyptic for Tales of the Apocalypse. Tomorrow's Hope is more traditional sci-fi speculative fiction. Blood, Sweat, and Steel is a mill sci-fi. Taming the Night would be the next one on the list by Jenny Posthumous, which is urban fantasy. I got a lot of stuff coming up. And actually, well, I'll be doing a repub on the Kildash series by Lee Ellis here shortly and releasing book 4, hopefully, by the end of December. I'm waiting on the final edits to come in and the cover art. So that was an interesting fantasy / sci-fi. It's a weird mix, but it's more fantasy than anything. Where magic is what's keeping the ships together in space between the planets, and I fell in love with it. And talked to him, and he wanted to come on board and bring it over to Three Ravens.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So, well, yeah, and lots more stuff. So just go follow us on threeravenspublishing.com.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for joining us tonight, William, and we're thankful for you, and hope you have a great Thanksgiving tomorrow.
Happy
Thanksgiving.
Don't eat too much. Have a great weekend. And I'll catch you guys on the flip side.
You got it, man.
Will do.
Sooner than later.
Love you, man.
All right, Ollie. You can take us out.
All right. Join us next Wednesday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Another great guest, another great time. And have a great Turkey Day tomorrow. Be thankful for your family, your friends, you know, and be creative. You have a whole long weekend. Create something neat. And we will talk about it next Wednesday. See you then. Good night.